Welcome back, everybody. Hey, we have a fun conversation today with a client and fellow business partner and friend and fellow pilot, Travis Fairbairn. So this will be part one of a two-part episode where we get into some pretty fun and exciting things. And I would tell everybody, after you listen to this, go back and listen to episode 194 because we actually show on a whiteboard exactly what Travis is explaining in this episode. So, Paul, what'd you think about this episode?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's always good to see Travis. You know, we talked about how he discovered IBC and a couple of other things and how I actually met him in person. We had like a three-hour breakfast. Was it last year?
I think it was at the beginning in January. So
yeah, it was in January.
We'll talk about that a little bit in this episode.
Yeah, we talk about that. And just an overall great guy. Young dude, you know, relatively young compared to us, but just creative and really a thinker, an IBC thinker. Yep. And that's kind of the guest we want to bring.
Yep. You guys will enjoy this one. Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast. All right. Welcome back. Good to see you, Paul. And we've got a guest with us today, Travis. Say hi, Travis.
Hey, everyone.
Now you're supposed to say actually, hi, Travis, you know, like the old joke.
Hi, Travis.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Thanks. But so Paul and I invited our buddy Travis Fairbairn onto the show today. And I guess we'll just jump right in. But Travis is a pilot. We'll let him give his background, but also a client. An IBC user. He's got multiple policies, not all of them with me. We'll talk about that.
Whoops.
All right. Well, we can just turn this off now. Yeah. It's over.
No, we got to throw that out there. But so we've known each other for a couple of years now and are involved in more than just IBC stuff. We've got other business relationship and personal relationship and all that blended together. And you actually, the funny thing is you and I have never met in person. We will, you know, the week that this recording goes out, we'll actually finally get to meet in person. You and Paul have met in person though.
Yeah. We had breakfast.
We did at the Silver Diner in Springfield, Virginia.
I've been back since then.
Yeah. Travis gets all over the place. So Travis, why don't you introduce yourself, give us your background and then tell us what led you to Infinite Banking.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I've been a pilot for the last 8 years or so. So 35, I have a wife, I have two kids. I got married back in 2011. I didn't start out as a pilot. I was in corporate sales, but all my family were pilots. And I'm in my office which is next to a control tower at an airport. And I'm thinking, why didn't I become a pilot? And so that's when I, almost 10 years ago, started making that transition over to becoming a pilot. Turns out it's way more fun than sales, at least to me.
Yeah, especially what kind of pilot are you?
Yeah, I fly private jets, so I fly corporate. So, you know, basically I fly at the whims of billionaires. So I specifically work for a family. And so when they want to go somewhere, we go somewhere. Sometimes it's business, sometimes it's vacation. And so if they want to go somewhere, we're like their drivers, right? But for the jets. So we kind of go all over the place.
I would assume even if they go on vacation, it's business. Maybe they're holding a board meeting or something in the Bahamas.
Oh, there's always a tax scenario when they do anything, including go on vacation. Yeah. Even their properties that they own end up being board meeting properties.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's awesome. Yeah, very smart. Yeah. Well, they didn't get to that position being, mediocre.
No, for sure. No. Yeah. And they're first generation. So they had to build it themselves.
Right on. What kind of airplane do you fly typically?
We have two jets in our department. We have a Gulfstream G450.
Nice.
So that's a transcontinental jet. I mean, there's jets that go further than a G450, but I mean, we go to Europe in that jet.
Yeah.
And then our other airplane is an Embraer Legacy 500. So it's a little bit smaller, still carries 10 people. We mostly use that for domestic, you know, travel, Mexico, Costa Rica type stuff. So
nice. ERJ 500.
No, not an ERJ. a much more fun jet.
Okay.
Actually, nowadays they call them Praetors. Today they call them Praetors. They actually changed them from Legacy when they first came out to Praetor because everyone was confusing them with the Legacy airliner jet.
Huh.
So
they let the market determine the name.
That's true. That's exactly what they did.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so tell us about your IBC journey. When did you start, I guess, when did you hear about it? And then how long did it take you to actually jump on it? And what did that look like?
Yeah, well, you know, it really stems going back to why I'm a corporate pilot. A lot of my friends went and did the airline thing, including my brother. I really wanted to give corporate a shot. I really wanted to do corporate aviation. I knew that if I had one of those kind of jobs in corporate where you do what we do now, you know, we travel places, we hang out for a few days, come home, I would have time to do other things outside of aviation, multiple income streams. And so that was the original plan, was to have that kind of time freedom to be able to do other things. Well, now I'm coming on this problem where I'm making some money, I'm saving, and there's really two motivations that led me to IBC. Number one, I wanted to put my savings to work in a really efficient way. And I hadn't figured out what that meant yet, but I knew I need to put it to work in a really efficient way so that when a business opportunity comes by, I would have a system in place already. This is even before I knew anything about IBC. And the second thing is, when it comes to business, I'm very attracted to ideas of, you know, perpetual sustainable growth systems. If I had an efficient saving strategy, then when I came across something that I knew could be a solid business model that would be a level of perpetual sustainable growth, I would have everything. I would have all the tools in the toolbox I need to jump on that opportunity. Turns out, after I got introduced to IBC, that ended up being both. I mean, it is its own business as well as a savings vehicle. And it's kind of funny, Dave, how I got introduced to IBC. You and I were in a Facebook group, and I had seen your posts for, I don't know, 6 months, a year. I don't even remember what group it was, but I remember seeing your post multiple times and wondering, I mean, he's obviously a pilot, I could tell that, but what is he doing? And then there was this one post you came out with. It was about how you bought your truck, and you were talking about your strategy of pairing different things together, including borrowing from your policy. And what really struck me about that is your language around using your dollar in more than one place at a time. And so that was the moment when I was like, okay, I got to figure out what he's talking about. And so I reached out and I sent you a message and I said, who are you and what are you doing? And that's when you responded, and that kind of started the conversation. And strangely enough, I had just started flying at this flight department I'm in now back then. And I was going, this was unfortunate. I was going to Gulfstream School a few days before you told me to buy the book, How to Become Your Own Banker. And so here I am entering Gulfstream School for a month. That's $120,000 training event, right? It's a lot of work. I mean, it's 12 hours a day, study, practice, chair fly, all the stuff, right? And I'm over here reading this How to Become Your Own Banker book and trying to figure out what all this IBC stuff is. I'm down the YouTube rabbit hole. If you've ever started IBC and you're trying to figure stuff out, you realize, oh, there's a bunch of stuff out there that isn't great content like this. And you go down rabbit holes and then you got to dig your way out and figure out the truth. There's a lot of that out there. So I went down a few rabbit holes until I realized, oh, that's not how this works. Read the book, did all the things while I was in Gulfstream School. That was a little bit of a distraction. It was the wrong time to get introduced to IBC.
You mean Gulfstream?
But that was the start of that journey.
Gulfstream School was the distraction.
Right? I'm in class with a notepad writing down scenarios after reading How I Become Your, while we're in class, about how to use this whole IBC strategy, right?
That's awesome.
So that's how I got introduced. And so it's grown from there.
Excellent. So tell us about the breakfast you had with Paul, because you'd been a client for a while. And then you got to know Paul, you started listening to the podcast a lot. and you're in his neck of the woods. So you reached out and you guys went out to breakfast. What was that conversation like?
Oh man,
we were there a while.
We were there till lunch. We could have had another meal.
Yeah,
I would have.
Yeah. But,
I mean, that's the way it was when Paul was on active duty. He was retired on active duty. I go out to breakfast, boss. I'll see you at lunchtime.
Well, it was on it had to have been a weekend.
It had to, because your wife was there too.
Was there too, and she actually did work very hard.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, if Tammy was there, it was definitely a Saturday.
Yeah, it was a weekend. I think it was like a Saturday.
It was because it was it might have been the day that Trump got inaugurated, because that's why I was there.
You were there for the inauguration. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah. Oh man, we talked everything. I mean, we talked IBC, we talked a little bit of politics, we talked everything that's going on today with Trump.
Yeah. So. And I interrogated Travis on why he went to somebody else for a different policy instead of going back to Dave and
because
the
he
riot
got his
act.
First policy with me. And then he heard about this program and he's like, oh, I guess I got to go get a policy with this guy to learn more about what he does.
To get coached
by him and learn that. And then,
was that the snowball? That was the snowball strategy?
Not directly, but related. We're income stacking. Let's income stacking. yeah.
So we'll get to that.
Sorry.
But as I like to say, they always come back. So especially after that conversation with Paul, what did Paul tell you?
Oh man. What didn't Paul tell me after that conversation?
I'd say this, you know, I told Travis, like, hey, Dave's the man, you know, really close friend of mine, a close business associate, and I would trust him with the lives of my wife and children. And that's all you need to know.
You know, let's just clear the air here for a second, Paul and Dave. There was nothing wrong with my first policy. There's nothing, no bad blood between us. I literally just said, oh, I got to learn this strategy, and you can't learn the strategy unless you have a policy over there. And so I started a policy and then wished I had started it here.
Yeah. Which me is I think Paul said something to you along the likes of, well, I'm surprised Dave will even talk to you. Like, he shouldn't even talk to you anymore.
Yeah. Yes. I hoped he was kidding. I guess he was kidding, because here we are still talking.
Yeah,
I was just kidding. It was a little bit of hazing, you know.
Yeah.
Friendly.
Yeah.
Just so some friendly locker room banter.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So that was great. You guys got the meet. And then so you learned the strategy. So why don't we talk about that? If anybody listening right now hasn't listened to last week's episode, I would say after you listen to this one, go back and watch that one on YouTube.
Yep.
Because it's actually something I learned from Travis, and Paul learned from Travis here.
Yeah. I got a note from a client just a moment ago, actually, a shared client of ours, a podcast listener, that he's like, oh, I wish I had been there for that webinar. So he went back and listened to it and is interested in hearing more. So I'll make that connection, Travis, here shortly.
Yeah, you know, I'll kind of give a little bit of story there too. That was kind of the next phase in what do I do with these policies, right? I mean, I'm the person who, when I start it, I dig in, I learn it, I get really involved. I was ready to put my cash value to work, right? And I know maybe not everyone immediately wants to do that, but for me, you know, I wanted to get busy and I wanted to start growing my banking system. And Dave, when you opened my first policy, you know, one of the things you told me was start a little just outside of your comfort zone in size. And so for my first policy, we designed a first year dump in where I put more in the first year, and then we designed an ongoing premium after that. And I did a little more than I was comfortable with. And I did actually start with a big policy for me at the time. Like, if I paid my premium every year, I was going to struggle to take a policy loan and pay it back with my own money as well as pay premium. So I had these policies that were, I mean, I started the right size for me. I didn't start too small. A lot of people think they started too small after they do it. I didn't. I started on the bigger side.
Good
and
for
so
you.
The next step for me was, you know, what am I going to do to put this to work in a way that it can, you know, pay itself back, create earnings, right? So now I'm starting to look at, okay, what's next? What do I do with this cash value? I don't want to go put it into something immediately where it's going to be stuck there, because I need a level of liquidity as reserve. I need a way of paying back these policy loans while also creating earnings. And so I ended up finding this company that did some coaching, right? Totally separate from IBC, but they would coach you in how to stack notes, like it's a debt, but as an investment, right? So most of us have a mortgage, and we pay our mortgage an amortized payment every month to our company that owns the mortgage. Well, this is as if we owned the mortgage. So I take a chunk from my IBC policy and go and start a note that would end up paying me an amortized payment back, except I'm collecting that amortized payment like the bank would. Mm-hmm.
You're holding and the note, so, just like the bank holds your mortgage.
Yeah, you're holding the note.
That's yeah.
Right. I'm holding. So I'm looking for opportunities to, you know, purchase or originate a note that goes back to my policy. So it was this. So, and it's not just a singular note, but what I was being coached on was not just the note itself, but how do we take a system of notes and a strategy to start stacking these notes one after another so that you essentially create this perpetual, you know, cash flow model that continues to scale, right? But in create it in a way that you're still maintaining a level of liquidity, meaning I may not take, you know, 100% of my cash value, right, and go start a note with it. I may take a portion of it because I'm forecasting and planning the strategy out in a way, because maybe 4 months from now, I need a lot of liquidity. So I'm not going to use all my cash value. I'm going to use a smaller portion. I'm going to use a chunk of my cash value. The great thing about notes is the forecastability. I know, is that even a word? I don't even know. I can forecast a note in the future. I know what I'm going to get 3 or 4 months from now, right? And so I started doing that. I took a policy loan. I think my first one was 10,000 or so. I planned it out because I knew with my own savings rate, and I treat my policies like a savings account. Like if I have a policy loan, every extra dollar I have goes in the policy loan. Like I store Absolutely. Money there.
Yeah.
I'm going to make more saving on, you know, rather than sticking in a high yield savings account, it's way more valuable sitting in the policy against a policy loan. So I took 10,000 out. I knew my savings rate and I knew what I was going to get from that note because I can forecast it. And I knew if I took $10,000 out and I used the payment from that $10,000, which was about $210 a month, I could take that 210, pay back the policy loan plus my savings, and I can have that sucker paid off in 4.5 months, right? So now I put this chunk to work. I still have 4 months later, I have full liquidity again in my policies, but I still have 4.5 years because this was a 5-year note. So I still have 4.5 years of payments left on this that I've already, the cost basis to borrowing from the policy to start it, I've already covered that. That's already been zeroed out. So this is just cash flow coming into my system. So at that point, I would simply repeat the process again. I would take another 10,000 out. Now I have double the note cash flow plus my savings rate, which means this time I paid it down in less than 4.5 months. Maybe 4.1 months, I have higher cash flow. And so what ends up happening is over time is you just start stacking these notes one after another. And you know, for me, I finance every major purchase through my policies. Okay, so anything major that I'm going to finance, I do it through my policies. So if I have a big purchase, let's say my wife wants to put a $15,000 patio in, right? And hypothetically, if my savings rate is $2,000 a month, you know, I mean, it's going to take 7 months or so to pay for that if I'm paying it off with my own savings rate, right? But if I have constantly built this system up, let's say I have $2,000 that I save every month, but I have another $3,000 of note cash flow coming back. Well, it's only going to cost me $2,000 a month to do this. $3,000 is from previous notes I've created. It's only going to take me 3 months to pay that $15,000 policy loan back, right? It's I really think of this note stacking system as just an extension of my savings plan because it takes me 5-10 minutes a month to manage. It's always in this perpetual thing. I'm always saving in this way. And I finance my major purchases. I finance my premiums with my policy. I personally, just personal choice, I pay annual premium. I don't pay monthly. I pay annual. And I finance it from a policy loan because my savings that I am saving up for my next year's premium, it's getting injected into my note cash flow system because I earn far more injecting it into that system than sticking it in a high yield savings account, right? So I inject all, even my premium savings for the year, it gets injected into this system, into my policies. It grows the whole system. And when it's time to pay premium the next year, I've already forecasted out when I need to have those policies, liquidity in those policies so that I can take a policy loan, pay my full premium, and then use the next 3 months or so to use my system, my savings, plus all the notes I've built up from the past couple of years. I just funnel all of it against that policy loan and pay it off in a few months. And then I get back to stacking notes again. And by the way, Paul, that first policy, as percentage wise of my income at that time was somewhere 25-30%.
Yeah. I'm glad. Yeah. So that's amazing.
You maxed it out. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the upper limit at, when someone has a relatively normal income, normal to high income that an underwriter will approve. So good on you. I mean, that's, I've talked about it before. I've got clients that, might make, $500,000 and their premiums are relatively meager.
Mm.
So as a percentage of their income.
So you maxed out basically your capability with the insurance company, nearly like 30% of your income. How quickly thereafter did you get a second policy?
Well, my income jumped quite a bit over those next few years.
Okay.
So
but
that
you didn't
same
wait
policy
a few years to get another policy.
No, I got a policy a year later. That one was $5,000 less than the first one I got. So my first one was $25,000. The next one was $20,000. So my premium's $45,000 a year. I didn't wait very long but I had an income jump, and that's the main reason I did it.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. So you see how quickly you were able to, you went big on the first one, and then a year later you were able to get another one almost just as big.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a result of, I guess it wasn't a result because you weren't doing the note stacking at that time.
No,
right? You hadn't done that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had started note stacking soon after. It wasn't that long. I mean, it was only maybe 3 months after I started my policy that I started note stacking. It was before. Yeah. And by the way, we did a first year dump in as well, Dave. And I don't know if I ever told you this, but I went out and liquidated all of my 401ks up to that point. Right.
Wow.
I was in a unique situation. It was very favorable for me. And the reason I did it was I would have kept funding my 401k, but the custodian company refused to let me take a loan against it.
Yep.
Right. My brother can take a loan against his,
really?
But my custodian won't. And that just irked me so much that I'm putting this money in with my employer and I can't even borrow against it. And I was in a very tax favorable scenario back then because my kids are adopted. And when you adopt in the state of Texas for the first 5 years, you get a really, really good tax credit. So I had to pay the 10% hit that you have to pay when you liquidate a 401k. But that was, if I was going to do it, that was the best time. So I decided to do it. So I basically paid no taxes on that money.
Good for you, man. That is...
Yeah, yeah, I did the exact same thing in 2015.
You
it's
did?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got an article out there on LinkedIn on why I quit my 401k.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, yeah. I've read that one.
Yeah.
Back then it was nerve wracking and a little scary, and premiums were a little scary the first 2 years. But gosh, now I look back, I'm really happy I did it that way because now I have more than I would have if I started smaller.
Yeah. And you realized even way back then, and you've obviously evolved in your IBC knowledge and knowledge of, stacking notes, that a 401k isn't money. It's just paper value.
It's a value on paper. If you can't spend it,
it's not money.
Yeah. What's the value to you today?
Yeah, that's a great point. Not money.
Right.
None of those things are money. Good for you, man.
Hey, hope everybody enjoyed this part one of a two-part series with our guest, Travis Fairbairn. We'll be back next week with the other half, so stay tuned. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.